Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Alcantara, Soroka, you look so good in Boca. Peralta, Manoa, Bounce Back, Ferrer, and Nola, Gilito, Castillo, Yoshida, Mosu, Sinto. Happy Kokomo Friday and happy Cinco de Mayo. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today. I am Frank Sample, joined by Scotty Dubs, Scott White. Today on the show, another big prospect promotion. They just won't stop. We're going to recap all of Thursday's action, week 7 sleepers, 2-star pitchers, and all that fun stuff. Before we get started, please like this video and subscribe on YouTube if you haven't already. And if you're listening on the audio side, download, follow, and leave a 5-star rating. Thank you very much. We do appreciate it. Let's get things started, Scott. Even before, oh my goodness gracious, let's start off with this prospect promotion. Matt Mervis is getting the call by the Chicago Cubs. This year down in the minors was hitting .286 with a .402 on base percentage, 6 homers, 7 doubles, 962 OPS, just a 17% strikeout rate. It's got pretty much everything you could ask for from a hitting prospect, outside of speed, I suppose. But lots of hype around Matt Mervis. I saw him out in the Arizona Fall League last year in November. The 2 games that I saw him play in, he homered in both of them. So I think he's going to be really good. What are your thoughts? He's 45% rostered. Is he a must-add in fantasy baseball?
Well, you know how you say the prospect call-ups just won't stop. I would kind of like for them to stop. I would kind of like to put a pause on them because it's starting to feel, you know, less like something to celebrate than.
Oh, I'm celebrating, oh, Scott. I'm celebrating every single one.
Here's an opportunity for me to mess something else up. I don't know. I don't know what Matt Mervis is going to do. I don't know how I can have any confidence in any prospect call-up anymore. I mean, on paper, it seems like there's a lot to like here. There's a lot of reason it should go right. I like that he's maintained a strikeout rate below 20%. It's very good for a power hitter. And in theory, it should. It would seem to indicate that he would make a smoother transition to the majors because that's one area less for more advanced pitchers to exploit. I like that he was basically unfazed by every move up the minor league ladder the last 2 years. His production remained steady from level to level to level without any sort of adjustment period. He just mashed everywhere he went, beginning at high A last year. I like that he's 25, actually. I mean, it's old for a prospect, but that means he's experienced. He's gotten a lot of at-bats already. He's seen some things between college and the minor leagues that, again, would seem to indicate that he's more prepared for this than a 20-year-old like Jordan Walker. But I mean, I could make a lot of arguments for a lot of different prospects getting called up, why they're going to have no trouble at all, and they're just going to cruise to fantasy prominence. And, you know, that's happened less often. Most of the time, certainly this year, and I feel like, you know, the last two or three years, that hasn't been the case. They've let us down. So I don't think it's wise for me to just say, for anyone who's called up, Mervis or otherwise, blanket statement, this guy's must add. I think you have to consider the circumstances of your league and understand that you're not buying a solution to first base here. You're buying a lottery ticket who may end up being a top 10 first baseman the rest of the way. That's within the realm of possibility for Matt Mervis. But he may also be somebody you're cutting in 2 weeks. Like those, and it's less likely to be the former than the latter, given the recent history of prospect call-ups, prospects who are much more highly regarded than Mervis even. So I have Mervis ranked 22nd at first baseman rest of season. That puts him behind guys like Josh Bell, like Ty France. He has more upside than Josh Bell and Ty France, I think. So you have to weigh, am I dropping? Yes, I rank him behind those guys, but that doesn't mean you absolutely can't drop those guys for them. You have to consider, is this a bench spot? Do I already have an answer at first base and I'm just pursuing upside here with Mervis? Is it a league so deep that whoever I decide on right now, I'm probably stuck with at first base for the rest of the season? So if I drop Ty France for Matt Mervis, like, I'm married to Matt Mervis henceforth. Somebody else is going to pick up Ty France and I'll never have another shot at him. You have to weigh all those things and understand that more likely than not, we aren't going to get the stud outcome from Mervis or anyone else who gets called up. But in theory, Matt Mervis could be really good. I don't want to just say don't add him either. It's become so nuanced, and I know that's probably annoying to listen to, but you know, if I just say I'm all in or I'm all out, it feels like a wild guess at this point. And I don't think that's helpful to anyone to treat it that way, least of all. I'm not helping myself by doing that, you know?
Yeah, no, I think nuance is the right word to use when we're talking about prospect additions. And look, in shallower leagues, like you mentioned, in a 10 or 12 team points league, or even like a head-to-head categories league, I have to imagine you have somebody on your bench who's expendable. And if that's the case, then yes, you should go out and add someone like Matt Mervis, because while a lot of prospects have flopped, there is a lot to like about his profile. And again, he's older, and he's every level he's been to, he's just kind of thrived, and the plate discipline coupled with the power, like this is about as polished as a hitter as you're going to find getting called up to the majors, and get a lot of Vinny Pasquantino vibes from last year from somebody like Matt Mervis. And frankly, Mervis is an even higher regarded prospect than Pasquantino was a year ago. So,
I don't know that that's necessarily true. I remember Baseball Prospectus was saying, you know, like right after he got called up, that they were preparing to put Pasquantino in their top 10 for their midseason top 50. Oh, and I'm not sure anybody was going to do that with Mervis. But, you know, some other things to point out with Mervis to get excited. And I've already mentioned some. He led all the minors in total bases last year. He led all the minors in extra base hits last year. 36 home runs, 40 doubles. He led all the minors in RBI last year. I don't know if he led it, or he may have been third, trying to remember what I read, but he had 119 RBI. So he was great. He had over 300. The lowest he hit at any of his three stops was 297. You mentioned he was hitting 286 this year. Had kind of an underwhelming spring, I'll point that out. But, you know, at the same time, name a single thing we saw in spring training that is carried over to the regular season, because I struggle to think of one other than stolen bases were way up.
Graham Ashcraft, baby.
No. I mean, yeah, he's gotten good results, but like he was a bat missing machine in spring training, and that hasn't carried over.
True.
So yeah, everything Like I wish I just snoozed through spring training because it was highly misleading in many ways.
You and I did not talk before ranking Matt Mervis. I wound up at the same exact spot. He's my 22nd ranked first baseman as well. He's just behind Josh Bell.
I feel like less of a downer then. Cause like, I really like Matt Mervis too. I was obsessed with him all last summer. I felt like every prospect report I was writing about him. It's just, I've totally lost faith in my ability to evaluate the readiness of any prospect call up. And I guess I'm not alone in that regard. Cause I doubt teams would be calling him up if they thought they were going to stink. Mm-hmm.
And like you, like if you play in a shallower league, I can make an argument that Mervis should be ranked at 15, like just ahead of Ty France and Andrew Vaughn and Alec Bohm and guys like that. So if you're not depending on that player in like a deeper league kind of sense where you just need plate appearances and someone who's going to play, then yeah, shallower league, you can make that swap and take the upside on a Matt Mervis. Scott,
that's a concise way of putting it, yes.
The questions that I kept getting are surrounding other prospects as well. Do I drop someone like Jordan Walker or Gunnar Henderson if they're on my bench for someone like Matt Mervis? Do you make that swap?
So no, I don't think I do either of those. I don't think I swap Mervis in for either of those two. It's easier to make the case for Walker. And like, I don't think it's crazy to drop Walker for Mervis, but I do assume in even like a shallower 10 team league, Walker would probably be picked up and then you'd never have a chance at him again. So I'd be reluctant to do that. I think in that shallower league scenario where you could even consider dropping a Jordan Walker, there's a chance nobody's going to pick up Mervis just yet. And so like this, you don't have to decide just yet.
Here's a fun one. Matt Mervis or Christian Encarnacion Strand, who seemingly every Thursday night has a multi-home run game because he hit three more homers on Thursday night. He is batting .432 with 7 home runs in 10 games at AAA. Who would you rather have on your team, Scott?
I mean, Mervis, he's being called up now and he's a more well-rounded hitter, I would say. Encarnacion Strand, not a particularly patient hitter, although we did see him make contact at a surprisingly high rate this spring. We saw him basically do everything right this spring. Hit over 500, 4 home runs, very loud home runs. I keep linking up this video from one of his spring training home runs. It's just one of the funnest home run highlights you'll ever see because the sound off the bat and the way the announcers react to it. It's awe-inspiring power that Christian Encarnacion Strand has. And he was the cover boy for my latest prospect report that just went up this morning, even before he had this 3 homer game. So that makes me feel good that he goes up and then he hits 3 home runs that day, up to 7 home runs now in just 10 games at AAA. And like the Reds are playing Spencer Steer at first base. There have been no updates on Joey Votto's status in like 2 weeks. They could certainly rearrange their lineup to integrate Encarnacion Strand. And I think that's coming very soon. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, yes, Mervis over Encarnacion Strand. But if you're kicking yourself now, like if your league is the sort where you missed out on Mervis today, somebody got to him before you and you're kicking yourself for not picking him up ahead of time so that you didn't have that struggle, go ahead and pick up Encarnacion Strand now. It may go just as well. It may go better because the power is so big.
And the ballpark is tremendous, obviously, in Cincinnati as well. So I do like both of them, but I'm with you right now. I am taking Matt Mervis over Christian Encarnacion Strand. We should see Mervis in the lineup on Friday. That's a day game too. So a little day game baseball on a Friday. Get to see Matt Mervis's debut. He should play every day too, because you know he's been good against lefties. Maybe they sit him against a tough lefty here or there, but I already saw a report that like Trey Mancini could lose playing time. So it sounds like they're planning on Matt Mervis being a near everyday player as well. Let's jump into the rest of Thursday's action.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right, Scotty. Oh my goodness gracious for you.
Gotta stick with the downer approach here.
you've been really down lately, Scott. I need like a good week of your fantasy teams just going off so we can get positive Scott back.
We need to have we need to have Corey Seager come back maybe, and
apparently he's 7 to 10 days away, so we're getting close.
Vinny Pasquantino maybe have a 3 homer game or something.
He's playing well, he's getting better.
Jack Flaherty. Let's talk about Jack Flaherty. Jack Flaherty was a disaster.
Oh.
And this keeps happening where I feel like I'm making some headway in ERA and whip. Oh, man, I'm finally going to climb out of last place here. Just chiseling away at it a little bit at a time. And then I get a start like this where Flaherty allows 10 earned runs in 2 1/3 innings. It was bad. It was against the Angels. And what makes it frustrating is, you know, I was pretty close to giving up on Flaherty a couple weeks ago, got off to a rough start to the season. And there wasn't a lot reassuring in the underlying data either. But then, you know, things started to turn around a bit. He had that quality start with 9 strikeouts a couple turns ago. The following start wasn't great, but he had a ton of swinging strikes again and just seemed like he was maybe starting to get it back. And then this happens. How much of it is, wow, Jack Flaherty is bad now? Probably that. And I certainly wouldn't hesitate to drop Flaherty if, you know, to pick up Matt Mervis or something like that, if there was somebody exciting on the waiver wire. But I will point out Jack Flaherty still had 10 whiffs on 74 pitches in this one, a very good rate. Of the 9 hits he allowed, 8 of them were singles. His velocity was fine. He got hit hard with the cutter, which was a pitch that entering this start had a 111 batting average against. So that pitch kind of turned on him for some reason. And like, he certainly isn't alone in terms of, oh, look, this pitcher seems like he's on a good run. And then he blows up like this. Like, that's happened to more pitchers than not. So yeah, you can drop Flaherty if you want. I'm totally cool with that, but it wouldn't be totally surprising if there came a point where we were talking about adding him again.
22 walks in 34 1/3 innings pitched for Jack Flaherty, 5.8 walks per 9 on the season. I assume that you're good dropping him for any of the pitching prospects we've mentioned recently. Bryce Miller, Tanner Bibee, Logan Allen, all of those players are rostered in 75% or less.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. You didn't get a chance to opine on Brandon Pfaadt's debut, which was not a very good one. I don't know if that of a swap like that makes sense, but what do you think? Flaherty for Pfaadt?
Yeah, I don't know that a swap like that makes sense either.
Yeah.
Another example, I mean, between Pfaadt and Gavin Stone yesterday, another example of these, you know, highly regarded prospects calling up and just stinking it up. And it's funny because they both got more hype than either of the Guardians guys who've come up and pitched well. That's part of the reason why it's hard to trust my judgment on these things right now. I guess with regard to Pfaadt, you know, I watched a fair amount of the start. Things kind of fell apart in the fifth inning. He was doing okay before then.
Yep.
The slider had an interesting shape to it. The changeup and slider both had a 40% whiff rate, which is great. He didn't throw either that much. He was heavy on the fastballs. And so maybe changing the pitch mix, we could see some improvement. I mean, maybe nerves played a huge role. Like it's hard to know what to make of anybody's debut because debuts are weird and all of that. But you know, it may just be also that we're in a cycle now where top prospects, you know, they'll come up and they'll struggle for a couple years before starting to put it together. And I go back and look at careers of very famous players from the 90s and early 2000s. And the first like 3 or 4 years of their career, they're terrible. And then they figure it out. And like that, we just may be entering a phase like that in baseball again, which, you know, is going to be a big adjustment for everybody. And it's too early to conclude that. But I don't know that there's a lot to take away from Brandon Pfaadt's debut other than, well, it's hard to rely on Brandon Pfaadt right now. You know, that's the only thing I can really take away from it.
To your point, Scott, two names just in the past decade who got off to really slow starts and were consensus top prospects, Byron Buxton and Lucas Giolito. And eventually they figured it out. You know, in Buxton's case, a lot of it was injury related, but he just really struggled a lot early on in his career too. So, I mean, those are two guys that eventually they figured it out and look, Jared Kelnick right now too, right? Like, the,
yeah.
Yep. It's a very small sample size. Who knows where he goes from here? But so far, so good. But you know, it took him some time to get where he is. Oh my goodness gracious! For me, I want to highlight a good starting pitcher for once, Scott. We've got one. And he's actually done it 5 starts in a row. Eduardo Rodriguez up against the Mets. 8 shutout, 2 hits, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts with 13 swinging strikes on 102 pitches. Limited the hard contact in this one. I watched the highlights of the start, dotting his fastball. Wherever the catcher put the glove, the fastball was there. He was hitting it high in the zone. They were swinging underneath it. Definitely some help from the umpire too, like very wide strike zone. So that helped out. I don't want to take anything away. Eduardo Rodriguez has been very good. His second start this season of 8 shutout baseball and at least 9 strikeouts. He had another 8 shutout, 10 strikeout start, which, like, what year is it? Eduardo Rodriguez doing this when, like, you know, the top pitchers in baseball can't even get on track right now.
I know.
The overall numbers, 181 ERA, 0.78 whip, 39 strikeouts over 44 and 2/3 innings pitched. There will be some regression, Scott. The BABIP is very low. The strand rate is very high. But to his credit, I mean, he is really limiting hard contact right now and keeping the walks down. How much are you buying in on what Eduardo Rodriguez is doing?
I mean, buying in enough that I'm not particularly eager to shop him. You know, he's going deep consistently into games. He's getting strikeouts at a pretty nice clip. I mean, he's been genuinely dominant here during this stretch. Only 7 hits allowed over his last 4 starts, 20 and 2/3 innings, 7 hits. I think you just have to ride that out. I think you don't want to mess with a good thing, especially given how volatile pitching has been. I'm sure he'll have a blow-up start at some point, but he also has, you know, some really good seasons in his track record and back in his history. So it's not like this is totally unprecedented and we should all be waiting for it to blow up. I think you can stick with Eduardo Rodriguez unless you're blown away with a trade offer.
I'm going to give you a 2 for Scott and go over to another starting pitcher who had a fantastic outing on Thursday. Zach Eflin had his best start as a member of the Tampa Bay Rays up against the Pirates. 7 shutout, only 3 hits, 0 walks, 10 strikeouts with 13 swinging strikes on 80 pitches. Incredibly efficient in this outing. He also limited the hard contact. What I noticed with him is he's fading his 4-seam fastball this season, basically going with a 3-pitch mix: sinker, curve, cutter. Immaculate control, more whiffs this year. The swinging strike rate and the ground ball rate are both up. No surprise, right? It's like Tampa Bay. We're like, why did they just give out their biggest contract in history to Zach Eflin, a free agent contract at that? But it seems like they may be onto something here following this outing. Are you buying into Zach Eflin maybe the same way you are with Eduardo Rodriguez?
Well, not quite to that extent, because this was only the second time in 5 starts that he's gone more than 5 innings. So, like, the Rays, no pitching, and it isn't terribly surprising that they figured out how to maximize his arsenal. The curveball was a pitch for Zach Eflin that really came on last year and emerged as a big bat misser, and so they have him throwing that more. It seems like the cutter, they have him throwing that more, and it just seems to be more productive mix for him. But the Rays also like to play these workload games, these usage games that kind of undermine some of the effectiveness of their pitchers. And Eflin seems to be falling into that as well. So I imagine he's not going to be a must start type in fantasy this year, even if the ratios are strong. But you know, career high swinging strike rate. There's a lot to like here. Between him and Eduardo Rodriguez, I prefer Rodriguez.
Let's take our first break. And when we return, I want to talk about a few of the young Orioles players. What's going on with Gunnar Henderson and Grayson Rodriguez? We'll discuss right after this. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome back, and a quick reminder to sign up for our Fantasy Baseball Today newsletter. Head to cbssports.com/newsletters, punch in your email address, and press sign up. Easy as that. It's free. You get the latest news and articles delivered right to your inbox every single weekday. Again, that's the Fantasy Baseball Today newsletter. Before I get into the Orioles, I want to talk about another AL East team real quick, Scott. This Red Sox offense has been on fire. They entered Thursday third in runs scored in baseball, fifth in home runs, second in hits, third in batting average overall. And that's without the likes of Trevor Story and Adam Duvall, who got off to a hot start this season as well. In that game on Thursday, they beat up on Kevin Gausman. Masataka Yoshida went 3-for-5 with his sixth home run. Now has a 14-game hitting streak and up to a .317 batting average. Justin Turner just quietly doing what he does, typically with the Dodgers, now with the Red Sox. He went 3-for-5 with 3 runs, 3 RBI, added his second stolen base. Rafael Devers has been in a bit of a batting average funk recently, but he went 3-for-5, hit his 11th home run. He has 31 RBI on the season too, so despite the lower batting average, he is giving you power and the counting stats. And the legend continues, Scott. Jarren Duran, 3-for-5 with 2 steals. The batting average remains over .400. He's moved up to 5th in the Red Sox lineup, and the guy can seemingly do no wrong. Any thoughts on this Red Sox offense, which is on fire?
I've gained a lot of confidence in Jarren Duran and especially Masataka Yoshida here in the last couple of weeks. I'm a huge Yoshida fan at this point. The guy walks more than he strikes out. The quality of his contact is very high, and the amount of his contact is very high. And while I wish he elevated a little better, he has elevated a lot better during this 14-game hitting streak. The ground ball rate down to 50%, which is still kind of a high ground ball rate, but it's certainly manageable if you're going to make that much contact. And I think Yoshida is absolutely a must-start player going forward. I didn't draft him anywhere because I was kind of a skeptic, but he is proving me wrong there. Duran, I still have some questions about him, but he's still pretty available in CBS Sports Leagues, amazingly, for as long as he's been batting over .400. Yeah. The quality of contact's been great for him. Of course, he has speed. We always knew that. And it's definitely gained a lot of ground in my mind as well. I still think the Red Sox offense as a whole is punching above its weight because I look at the lineup and I don't see any sluggers there except for Rafael Devers. Like, who in their lineup is going to hit even 20 home runs?
Masataka Yoshida, Scott.
Maybe. Maybe. He's probably the best bet. Maybe Duran can do it. Maybe Casas, maybe Justin Turner, though I think that's a real stretch at this stage of his career. Like, there just doesn't seem to be enough power there, but there's a lot of on-base ability.
A lot.
And they may not be a top 5 offense, but they're probably in the top half of the league in offense.
Yeah, and I mentioned this on yesterday's podcast with the Welsh that I moved Yoshida inside of my top 30 outfielders in head-to-head points leagues because, for the reasons you mentioned, it's the plate discipline, the power coming around now. Even if those aren't home runs, I think he'll hit a lot of doubles. He's batting second, so should get lots of plate appearances and counting stats. So lots to like right now with Masataka Yoshida. Not lots to like about those young Orioles. Gunnar Henderson and Grayson Rodriguez. We'll start with Gunnar, who went 1-for-2 with a walk and actually hit his third home run of the season on Thursday. The batting average is 190. But what's so odd about this, Scott, is that he is walking a ton. He has 21 walks to 30 strikeouts on the season. I kind of feel like maybe he's being a little bit too passive. Like, his swing rate is down this year. He's not chasing pitches at all, which usually is a good thing, but maybe he needs to just be a little bit more aggressive. He's still hitting the ball hard. The ground ball rate is down. I think there's actually, but under the hood, I think there's a lot of good signs with Gunnar Henderson. One thing I don't really like is he has struggled mightily against lefties. He's only 2-for-22. It's a small sample size, but what are your thoughts on Gunnar Henderson, and would you be looking to buy right now?
I think Gunnar Henderson is probably going to figure it out. Like you said, there are a lot of good signs under the hood, and you know, he's just another example of these young players needing more time to figure it out. And certainly from a dynasty perspective, we shouldn't lose faith. In a single season, you know, a redraft perspective, there will come a point where we have to move on if he continues to bat under 200. But I think we're, you know, at least 2 or 3 weeks away from that. And even if we do move on then, I mean, we may end up regretting it. Like, how late was Bobby Witt batting 210 last year? I think it was like June 7th. He was still batting 210, something close to that. So, yeah, don't be so quick to give up on Henderson. Would I buy on him if the price is right? If the price is right. But it you have to treat him sort of like I talked about how we should treat prospect call-ups. Like, it's not, you're not buying a certainty. You're not buying the solution to your third base problems. You're buying a lottery ticket. And if the cost is right, I mean, the appeal of buying a lottery ticket is the cost is very low. You're probably going to lose the money you paid for it, but the cost is low for a potentially huge reward. And so just keep that in mind with these young, unproven types.
Yeah, and you're buying versatility too. If you play on CBS, Gunnar Henderson entered the season with third base eligibility, now has shortstop, so that middle corner kind of helpfulness from Gunnar Henderson is something that you could also be looking to buy right now as well. Let's move over to Grayson Rodriguez, who had another subpar outing at the Kansas City Royals. You know, on paper, supposed to be a good matchup here. 3 2/3, 8 hits, 6 earned runs, 3 strikeouts to 1 walk, 3 homers allowed in this start, and the average exit velocity, 92.5 mile per hour against in this one. The velocity was down a little bit across the board for him, and faded his slider in this start. Really used his cutter more. Maybe just didn't have a feel for that slider. The changeup didn't give him anything either. He got 0 whiffs on that pitch. Just feels like he's trying to work through it right now, Scott. And again, it's like maybe we just like had too high of expectations for the quote unquote, you know, top pitching prospect in baseball. No such thing as a pitching prospect. But your thoughts on Grayson Rodriguez, would you be looking to buy low on him?
I mean, two top pitching prospect in baseball 2 years running.
That's right.
And it seemed like he was, I mean, sort of like Jack Flaherty. It seemed like he was on the right track. He was coming off his best start yet. The 9-strikeout effort against the Tigers and the start before that also against the Tigers was really good. Kansas City seemed like it should have been another cakewalk for him. And it didn't happen. And so, I mean, I hate to sound like a broken record here, but sure. Buy on Grayson Rodriguez if the price is right. Just understand you're not getting a sure thing. You're getting a lottery ticket, blah, blah, blah. if somebody's lost patience with him and is close to dropping him and you can, you know, offer up a borderline rosterable guy for him, then great. But, or if somebody drops him, go ahead and pick him up.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it's going to take for me to feel comfortable starting Grayson Rodriguez at this point.
Yeah, his next... Oh gosh, next week his matchup is the Tampa Bay Rays. There's no way. There's no way you could start Grayson Rodriguez against the Rays right now.
Probably means he'll dominate, but yeah. But like that doesn't mean you shouldn't go against process just because nothing seems very predictable right now.
It's one of those where even if he dominated on my bench, I wouldn't be upset because I kind of need to see a prove it start from Grayson Rodriguez, or maybe even a couple of starts following this outing against the Royals. Here's what you need to remember. He has not thrown more than five innings in any of his starts this season. So he is going to give you a lot of strikeouts. He's already done that this year. He's got an 11.8 K per nine, but the control has been an issue. He's given up a lot of hard contact. Those two things combined, it's obviously going to lead to a higher whip and lots of runs scored. So strikeouts, yes, but remember, he's not going to give you a lot of length and volume. So maybe in a points league, probably not someone you you want to go out and buy right now. That is Grayson Rodriguez. Let's get into the news and notes. Ronald Acuna was removed with a left knee injury. He fouled the ball off of his knee in the sixth inning of that game. There was a later report that should be fine. Seems like he's good to go. No issues there. Corey Seager.
Like a daily scare from him.
Yeah.
He's writhing around in pain. Everybody's concerned. And then it's like, yeah, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Which is good. We want him to be fine. It's just, it's getting to be kind of funny.
Corey Seager is 7 to 10 days away from returning. So get those trade offers in now if you'd like to acquire Corey Seager before the return. Tyler Glasnow will make a minor league rehab start at AAA on Friday. The plan is for him to make 2 to 3 rehab starts. So middle of May, that seems pretty realistic for Tyler Glasnow. Tristan McKenzie threw another bullpen session on Tuesday, his second since being diagnosed with that muscle strain in his shoulder. Nolan Gorman exited with lower back tightness. Zach Plesac was optioned to AAA. Peyton Battenfield will start in his place on Friday. And Scott, yesterday the Welsh brought up Gavin Williams as a stash candidate, another one of those top pitching prospects in the Guardians organization. It seems if you told me that at some point this season, all three of Gavin Williams, Tanner Bibee, and Logan Allen would be in the Guardians rotation, I would not have believed you. But now it seems like a pretty realistic thing. Like Gavin Williams is dominating in the minors. He's recently promoted to AAA. It would not surprise me if we see him soon-ish.
Yeah, well, if you told me they'd all three be in the rotation before the end of May, which hasn't happened yet, but yeah, it does seem plausible. As I mentioned earlier in the show, my latest prospects report is out. And if you haven't read the prospects report, I have my five on the verge every week, the five who most need to be stashed in redraft leagues. And then I have more in there than that. But that tends to be the focus of the article. I didn't put Gavin Williams in there as one of the five. I considered it.
But Mervis was one of them. So
Mervis was in there.
Would Gavin Williams
I don't know that Williams was necessarily the sixth either. If it was 10 on the verge, Williams would have been in there. I feel confident saying. But based on everything else we've said about prospects in this podcast, I don't know that there are many leagues where that many prospects should be stashed anyway.
Fair enough. I mean, the only thing that I think Gavin Williams has in his favor is just that organization, man. Like the Guardians just churn out pitching prospects, and Bibee and Allen have looked so great so far. And
in theory, he is a bigger talent than either of them.
Yeah, so he's got more prospect pedigree than either of those guys. So just a name that should be on your radar at this point. Vince Velasquez left his start early due to right elbow discomfort, and somebody tweeted us asking about Luis Ortiz. I think that's another name just to have on the radar. Six starts at AAA. The numbers have been pretty good for him as well. So that's definitely an option. He has RP eligibility on CBS as well. Jake Berger was placed on the IL with a strained left oblique. Lenin Sosa was recalled. Phillies manager Rob Thompson confirmed that Matt Schramm will move into the bullpen when Ranger Suarez is activated, which is likely to happen next week. Orlando Arcia began taking dry swings on Thursday. Scott, what happens when he returns? Do you think that is the end of Vaughn Grissom for now?
Yeah, I do. He's had some defensive issues, mostly like throws. I think he has like five errors already and hasn't been providing. I don't think he has a home run yet. Doesn't have a stolen base yet. Hit a fair amount of singles, but yeah, there's no reason for them to keep him around once Arcia is ready to go.
Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol was non-committal when asked whether Steven Matz will remain in the rotation. Adam Wainwright is set to return this weekend, and Matthew Liberatore has looked great in the minors this year. he is another name that should be on your radar. I don't think he's a must add or mustache right now, but he's made some changes. The velocity's up and he's getting more whiffs this year. Liberatore is the name there. Yuri's Familia was designated for assignment by the A's. Zach Jackson had the most recent save opportunity. And of course, he gave up a game tying home run to AJ Pollock, which ruined the potential first win for an A's starting pitcher. That would have been JP Sears on Wednesday night. But Zach Jackson ruined it. Blue Jays pitching prospect Ricky Tiedemann left his start in the minors Thursday due to left biceps discomfort, which obviously does not sound good. I think he's probably going to be shut down for a while. No confirmation, just speculation there on my part. Let's take our final break. When we return, we'll get into a few waiver wire options and our Week 7 preview right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
A few waiver wire options worth mentioning real quick before we get into our Week 7 preview. Wade Miley goes into Coors Field and he produces a quality start. He survived 6 innings, 3 runs, only 2 strikeouts for him. Limited the hard contact, just 80.1 mile per hour average exit velocity in that start. And now Wade Miley has allowed 3 earned runs or fewer in all 6 of his starts. He's 65% rostered. Scott, are you buying into the Wade Miley renaissance here? Latest start in Coors Field.
No, I'm not. I mean, he's been at times a worthy streamer over his entire career, but I don't think he's going to break through as more than that.
Yes, I tend to agree as well. 65% roster going up against the Dodgers next week, too. Don't really like that matchup. In deeper leagues, Dylan Dodd made his return to the Braves rotation, turned in a quality start at the Marlins, and I use the term quality very loosely there. 6 innings, 8 hits, 3 earned runs, 3 walks, 1 strikeout. That was it.
Yep.
I thought it was interesting. He did change up his pitch mix in this one. He used his changeup a lot more than we saw earlier in the season. It's got deeper leagues, you know, 15-teamers and deeper than that. Any interest in Dylan Dodd? He could stick around due to the Kyle Wright injury.
Oh, no. Brian Snitker said it was just a spot start.
So I lied.
It's rare clarity. But yes, another example of something that couldn't be going any differently than it did in spring training. Dylan Dodd and Jarrett Schuster both, frankly.
As well, I wonder if Mike Soroka is a name there to watch. I speculated on him on yesterday's podcast.
Yeah, he'll probably be up soon. I don't know that we should be that excited about it. I don't know that there's much reason to believe he'll be good. It's been so long, years, since he pitched a major league game, and the little bits we've seen of him since recovering from the second Achilles surgery between the minors and between spring training, you know, he hasn't been that effective. He's not going to be a big strikeout guy. I'm not that eager to stash Soroka. I'd rather see what he has and see if he's worth picking up than invest a roster spot in him now.
There were a few waiver wire hitters I wanted to mention from Thursday's action. Jorge Soler, we spoke about him earlier in the year. he was crushing the ball. And, you know, he's obviously a very streaky player, and, you know, he kind of went through a recent slump, but he woke up with another big game here on Thursday, went 3 for 5, hit his 6th home run of the season, 3 batted balls over 111 miles per hour. That is insane for one game. He's still crushing the ball this year. I know he's very up and down, but man, Jorge Soler, there's still a lot to like with him. He's 47% rostered right now. Scott, I was just talking about Jorge Soler. I know recently he hasn't been very good, but the batted ball data still looks really, really strong for him.
It always has, right? Like, he's always shown that outlier quality of contact that should make him, you know, that basically backs up the 48 homer season he had in 2019. But other than that season and a partial season with the Braves 2 years ago, he hasn't delivered on those metrics. So yeah, maybe that changes this year. The fact he's hitting 220 though, I don't know. I'm not buying especially hard on Jorge Soler.
He is hitting 220, but the expected numbers, 253 XBA, 513 XLUG. It feels like he's been unlucky, at least, you know, based on the strikeout rate is not as bad as it has been in years past. And he's still hitting the ball really hard. So maybe not a must roster in like 3 outfielder leagues. But if you need power or if you play in a 5 outfielder league, I think you probably should hold on to Jorge Soler. Scott, anything with Carlos Santana? He went 2 for 4 with 2 doubles and 2 RBI. He's batting 278 this year. Plate discipline still looks really good. Only 2 home runs, but 11 doubles. So I think it has to be like a deeper points league kind of play, but he's doing a lot of the Carlos Santana things that we've always liked in that format.
Yeah, he is. how old is Carlos Santana now?
older than me.
37. You know what Carlos Santana hit last year? 202. You know what he hit the year before? 214. You know what he hit the year before that? 199.
Scott, it's the Pirates Renaissance, baby.
it's the golden age of Pirates.
There you go. With that being said, Andrew McCutchen.
17th century. I don't know.
Andrew McCutchen has slowed down quite a bit. So I see you do have the Pirates as the number one hitter matchups next week. So
I do.
I'll just throw it out there. If you need a corner infielder in a deeper league, Carlos Santana, name you can look at. Speaking of those deeper leagues, anything with these names, Scott? Michael Garcia went 2 for 5 with a steal, and in 3 games since being called up by the Royals, 5 hits, 2 runs, 2 RBI, and that stolen base. J.J. Bleda went 2 for 4 with his first home run as a member of the Oakland A's. Again, we're talking 15-team leagues or deeper. Any interest in, you know, kind of prospect-y names there?
Woof.
All right. I guess that's all you need to know. Let's move into our Week 7 preview, the schedule for next week. 8 teams have 7 games, 18 teams have 6 games, and 4 teams have 5 games. That includes the Braves, the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, and the Phillies. Starters sit these fringe 2-star pitchers, Scott, and it wasn't a great week for this segment. Like, it was very straightforward to me. You start your stud 2-star pitchers. There's very obvious pickups, and then there's like a few kind of crappy names just below them, and that's who I'm going to ask you about. Kyle Gibson going up against the Rays and the Pirates.
First of all, do I sound like a robot still? Do I sound okay?
Nope, I think you're perfect just in time.
Okay, commenters are making me self-conscious here. All right, Kyle Gibson. Oh, well, if we're starting with Kyle Gibson, I'm probably saying no to everybody because coming off a start where he gave up 17 hard hit balls. Now he's facing the Rays and Pirates in a 2-star week. And I guess for now we're considering the Pirates a tough matchup. Certainly considering the Rays a tough matchup. So no thanks.
So it's a no on Eric Lauer and Michael Walker, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is a no.
Let's get into 2-star pitchers to add in stream. You've got 6 names on the list.
Yes, I do. Those names are Tanner Bibee's number 1, easy. Not sure why he's still available in 25% of CBS Sports leagues, because he's looked great in his first 2 starts. And one of his matchups this week is against the Tigers. So yes, please. Andrew Heaney. So Andrew Heaney is 3rd among my sleeper pitchers, whether we're talking 1 start or 2 this week. And yet I don't feel great about him because he's Andrew Heaney. So that goes to show you the state that we're in now with sleeper pitchers. We're even third on my list. I'm already not feeling great about. Okay, so Andrew Heaney, though, gets the Mariners and Athletics this week. So that makes me feel a little better, but still not great. Don't want to call him a must-start by any stretch of the imagination. John Gray gets those same matchups, Seattle and Oakland. So if you're looking to maximize starts, I guess you could give him a look. Then we go down a few spots here and we get to Louis Varland, who's facing the Padres and Cubs. Not great matchups, but we have between the two starts we've seen from him in the majors this year, he's gotten a lot of swings and misses. So I think there's something to see there with Louis Varland. I don't know that this week is really the time to use him, but at least he's making two starts. And this will really go to show you just how hard it is to come up with 10 sleeper pitchers in any given week. Because I'm going to mention Brandon Pfaadt as one. I don't think you should actually start Brandon Pfaadt.
Those matchups are really good though, Scott.
Marlins and Giants. Yeah. It's better than the Rangers. I don't think you should actually do it. Like if it's a really deep points league where you can't do you that much damage and you're hoping to get lucky, okay. But that's really the only situation where I could see doing that. And then I also have Miles Michaelis here. Like him even less than Pfaadt. His matchups at the Cubs, at the Red Sox, those clearly aren't great, but it's two starts from a pitcher who we trusted not so long ago in Miles Michaelis.
All right, let's stick with the
ringing endorsements there. I know. Sometimes I just hate this task because it's like it's trying to make chicken salad out of chicken crap.
There's a few, I think, more interesting names, at least on the single star streamers, Scott. Four names that you that I like quite a bit. I don't know if you like them.
Yes. Well, I do like Bryce Miller at Detroit. How could you not after that debut he had against the Athletics? So him and Bibee are really the two sleeper pitchers this week that I feel really comfortable recommending. But Drew Smyly at Minnesota is interesting. We don't think of the Twins offense as being that bad, but they are second worst in terms of OPS against left-handed pitchers. And that's what Smyly is. He's a left-handed pitcher. So that one's pretty good. Logan Taylor Allen, or just Logan Allen if you prefer. Logan T. Allen, some might say. I would start him. Like, I think he would deserve to be on this list no matter who he's facing, and so I'm putting him on here against the Angels. No, it's kind of a tough matchup. But hey, he was great against the Red Sox last time out. Reed Detmers is at Cleveland. Maybe that'll go well. Maybe not. And that's it. That's it for the one-start streamers.
All right, let's move over to the hitting side of things, the best hitter matchups for next week. The Pirates, the Brewers, the White Sox, Guardians, and the Giants. The worst hitter matchups, Blue Jays, Padres, Astros, Reds, and the Braves. With that being said, Scott, your top sleeper hitters for week 7.
So Jack Sawinski's number one on the list. You mentioned the Pirates have the best matchups of any team. He has cooled off recently, like right after the point where we got excited about him. But the Pirates matchups, as I recall, were pretty tough last week. So it stood to reason that he would cool off. Only one left-hander on their six-game schedule, in addition to having favorable matchups. So Jack Sawinski is a go. I have Jaron Duran on here as my number two sleeper hitter, even though the Red Sox are playing only 5 games, which kind of says something about the state of sleeper hitters as well. I just want to start Jaron Duran, even in a 5-game week, over just about all of them. Go ahead and keep him in the lineup, even though he has 5 games. You mentioned the Giants have the 5th best matchups. They only have 2 lefties on their 7-game schedule. So I think Lamont Wade, who's been hot, is a good play. I think Jock Peterson is a pretty good play. I might try my luck with JD Davis again if I'm hurting at corner infield. Miguel Vargas has been heating up, and I think it's a fine time to use him. Matchups are middle of the road for the Dodgers, but he's heating up. Brett Beatty also heating up, and the Mets have just one left-hander on the schedule. So it's not a bad time to try him out. And then others who have a seven-game schedule, which not many teams do this week, include Harold Ramirez, Ezekiel Duran, Esteri Ruiz, who's been hot, stealing a ton of bases. I'd be fine using any of them in a pinch if I needed help at those positions.
All right. Well, let's wrap up with a few leftovers here. And there was a pitching duel, Scott, between Lucas Giolito and Pablo Lopez on Thursday. And yeah, they were both fantastic. Giolito, 7 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts with 18 swinging strikes. Pablo Lopez on the other side, 7 innings, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts for him, 16 swinging strikes. Anything in particular you wanted to point out about these two?
Yeah, Giolito, the one ingredient that had been missing for him is the swinging strikes. His swinging strike rate for the year prior to this start where he had 18 of them, his swinging strike rate was only 11.1. Last year it was 12.2. During his best years, it was more like 15. So he needed to get that up. He needed to start to get that up for me to feel really comfortable, really confident that he's back. And this is a good first step toward doing that, getting those 18 swinging strikes. And of course, the ERA now is down to 367, 110 whip. Things are looking up here for Lucas Giolito.
Justin Verlander made his Mets debut, and he was okay. 5 innings, 2 runs, 5 strikeouts to just 1 walk. He allowed back-to-back solo home runs in the first inning and then settled down after that. Anything that stood out to you from Verlander's debut?
I had a lot of hard contact. 95.2 mile per hour average exit velocity. But apart from that, nothing stood out as too concerning. I'll give him a pass for that. I mean, he is Justin Verlander after all. And it's good to have him back.
Kevin Gausman got destroyed in Fenway Park. 3 1/3, 10 hits, 8 earned runs. That is the second time this season he's allowed 8 runs in a start. Just like that, the ERA jumps up to 3.86. And as much as, look, Gausman's a very talented pitcher, Scott. He gets a ton of swinging strikes, a lot of strikeouts. He keeps the walks down. He allows a lot of hard contact. He did last year. He's doing that again this season. He did that again in this start. I really like Gausman, but I think that he's going to continue to have these blow-up starts every now and then.
Well, I go back to who hasn't this year.
True.
Like, it's just nobody's immune from it. You think you have a guy here in Gausman who, yes, I have a reliable ace. You suckers who didn't draft him, you're not as smart as me. And then it happens to him too. And who hasn't it happened to? Eduardo Rodriguez?
Garrett Cole, baby. Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's coming. I'm sure it's coming.
Don't
get too comfortable.
Don't you wish that evil on him, Scotty. a few signs of life for hitters that I wanted to point out. Taylor Ward, over his last 3 games, has 6 hits, 1 homer, 4 RBI. He had 4 hard hits on Thursday. Anthony Santander, multiple hits in 4 of his last 5 games. He went 2 for 5 with his 3rd home run. Eloy Jimenez went 3 for 5 with his 4th home run. He had 4 hard hits in that game, 2 at 111 miles per hour or harder for Eloy. Over his last 7, he's batting .448 with 2 home runs. Dalton Varsho, multiple hits in 3 straight and home runs in each of his previous 2 before this. Anything to add on those, Scott? Ward, Santander, Eloy, and Varsho.
I mean, no, not really. I think the player who I've lost the most faith in of these 4 is Santander. I probably had the least faith in him to begin with, let's be honest. Part of the reason I had to leave Gavin Williams out of my 5 prospects to stash was because I had Colton Cowser in there, who has been on fire at AAA for the Orioles. He entered Thursday. Let me see if I can find the numbers real quick. He entered Thursday, Colton Cowser, batting .417 over his past 20 games at AAA with an on-base percentage I mean, for the season, his on-base percentage is .457. He has great on-base skills, power, speed. Like, basically does everything you would want a hitter to do. Strikeout rate is a little on the high side considering, but it's a great hit tool. And considering the Orioles, you know, it was funny you mentioned how disappointing Gunnar Henderson and Grayson Rodriguez have been. Orioles entered Thursday with the second best record in the American League. So just imagine if Henderson and Rodriguez were performing up to expectation. But my point with that is, like, if they think Hauser's ready, they're not going to hold him back. And Santander's slow start, you know, I'm kind of rooting against Santander at this point because I want to see Hauser. They could always just move Santander to DH, make him a full-time DH. There's room for Hauser either way. But that's a name to keep an eye on, too. Colton Hauser.
A few youngsters that are coming around, hopefully. Riley Green went 2-for-4 with a sock and a shoe. He hit that home run off of Justin Verlander. Has 9 hits over his last 6 games. Ezekiel Tovar went 1-for-3 with 2 runs and 2 RBI. And over his last 10 games, he's batting .314 with a homer, 2 doubles. The strikeouts are high, but the average exit velocity has looked pretty good. So, not saying you need to re-add those guys, but who knows? Another week of this, then yeah, maybe that's something we're talking about. Two other hitters that have been heating up for quite some time now. Salvador Perez, over his last 16 games, is batting .311 with 4 homers and a ton of hard contact. Javier Baez, very quiet.
Get him, Salvi.
Javier Baez very quietly, 1-for-3 with his second home run. He had 3 hard hits in that game, a couple of those coming against Justin Verlander. Over his last 17 games, Baez is batting .333 with 2 homers, 2 steals, 91.6 mile per hour average exit velocity, and an 18% strikeout rate. He's down to 77% rostered. So something to monitor with Javier Baez. A few bullpen updates for the Tigers. Alex Lang struck out 2 more for his 5th save. He's 47% rostered if you need saves. For Tampa Bay, Jason Adam entered the 9th with a 3-run lead. He gave up 2 unearned runs, but struck out 3 for his 2nd save this week. Reminder that Pete Fairbanks was placed on the IL. And that sweeper for Jason Adam, insane. It is an insane pitch. He's 28% rostered. So again, if you do need saves, I actually prefer him over Alex Lang. For the, I was about to say Seahawks, that is the Mariners. Paul Sewald pitched a clean 9th inning for his 9th save. And for the Braves, AJ Minter struck out 2 for his 7th save. It sounded like Raisel Iglesias was close to returning. And then, I don't know. He's just not back yet. Have you heard anything, Scott?
No, I was just looking that up because I'm surprised he's not back yet, but it would not at all surprise me if this is Minter's last save for a while.
All right, let's wrap up with to stream or not to stream. We'll go through our 2 or 3 favorites for each day. And oh, I remember this group because I talked about it with the Welsh yesterday. And actually, it's okay. I thought it was worse than it was. Josiah Gray at the Diamondbacks. You know, it's a tough-ish matchup, but he's pitched very well this season. Bailey Ober at Cleveland, I think, is okay.
Yeah, I prefer that one to Gray, actually.
Maybe Eduardo Cabrera at the Cubs? It's a little scary.
It's just Edward Cabrera, Frank.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why I did that. Sorry.
I've done it a few times,
Edward.
Myself. I guess that's the third best, but it's a distant third behind Ober and Josiah Gray.
Okay. On Saturday, we've got Logan T. Allen going up against the Twins. I like that. Domingo Herman at Tampa Bay. I mean, that's so boomer bust. I don't think I have it in me to do it, Scott. I don't think so.
Well, Logan Allen's a lefty, right? And the Twins, as I pointed out earlier, have the second worst OPS against lefties. So I think he's a very easy call.
Yeah,
it really just comes down to who the second choice is. And
Wainwright's debut against the Tigers?
No. I mean, I think Herman and Oviedo are choices 2 and 3 here. But again, distant 2 and 3.
Tough matches.
Ones I feel great about recommending.
Yeah, Oviedo's going up against the Blue Jays. I thought about Brady Singer against Oakland just because Oakland's so bad. But Brady Singer might actually be worse than the Oakland A's offense right now. On Sunday, scrolling through here, Mason Miller at the Royals, check.
Sure.
Hayden Wesneski up against the Marlins. Check.
A little iffy, but I could do it.
This one's interesting. Bryce Miller, his second start of his career up against the Houston Astros.
I think I'd do it. Yeah. I think I'd do it over Wesneski.
Okay. Yeah, I think those are the main ones that stand out for me. So I would go Mason Miller, Bryce Miller, and then Wesneski in that order.
Yeah, and if you're really desperate, I don't think Cal Quantrill against the Twins is terrible. You might get a quality start out of it.
We're going to wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thanks as always for tuning in to Fantasy Baseball Today. Please make sure to follow and leave a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. We'll be back again next week. Bye-bye.
Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am ready.
Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount+.
Yes!